said in an interview this week that he plans to play beyond 2019.
He just redefines stupidity every day.
The TB12 method is more than just better training. It's better living.
How valuable is that stability to the organization?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, right now I think it's a one-game season here.
Yeah, no.
So we'll just concentrate on the Jets.
J-E-T-E-J.
Worry about next year and next year.
That's a really good answer.
Worry about next week.
Thanks, bro.
Worry about last year, some other year.
Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
It's Dale and Keith. Very exciting. I haven't seen Tom E. Kern in a long time.
It has been a while.
Were you both wearing glasses? Probably the last time that we saw each other, we weren't wearing glasses.
Most likely not, and I'm positive you weren't wearing a hat that was shaped like some kind
of my new
deflated
look.
Chef hat with a brim that's not necessarily even a flat brim. It's actually shaped like a U. And it's not the most, it says Lord Hobo Brewing
Company. Yeah, Lord Hobo Brewing Company. Boom sauce. Can you give me a boom sauce? It's fun to say.
They were just saying that you say this.
It's fun to say.
Say this is your catchphrase.
Say boom sauce.
At some point during the program, I'm not like a trained dog. We're not going to speak, sit up, and all that. At some point, I'll give you that phrase.
Boom sauce, baby.
There you go.
Whoa, I can't even see.
Amen.
Yeah. Oh, there he is. Hey.
Sneaking around back here.
It's like if you were. Did you have any desire ever to call a football game, like be sort of the color analyst?
1,000%.
Really? Have you ever got that opportunity?
No.
You would be good at it, I think.
I love it. I would have loved to do that. I like reading ads. I like all that classic stuff.
Today's your lucky day.
All that classic stuff that we grew up with because we're of a certain age.
Take a bow!
Where it was you were going to be Bob LaBelle or, you know,
Bob LaBelle or Bob LaBelle, yes.
Yeah, or Mike Lynch or, Newmy. So you were either going to be a newsreader or a play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
There was no aspiration to be, a bloviator, which is what we've turned into.
Well, it was Eddie Adelman.
Right, but I didn't.
But that really... was for Sunday night only.
Right.
Right?
So
the sports huddle.
I always wanted to do play-by-play.
So my point is that if you had you need a call, like we heard Take a Bow from John Meter Perel.
And this is his magnum opus. This is his grand work.
That could be you. And so if I'm just saying, think of a catchphrase for that when that moment arises. My thing is at Boom Sauce, which is Lord Hobo Brewing Company, great IPA. Mm-hmm. I saw the can. I said, oh, my goodness, what a great home run call.
The juice.
How does not anyone latch on to this?
See, I think you want to be a little more organic than that, don't you?
No, but it is organic. It's the epitome
of organic.
Like, I
think Dick Enberg, no, it's not. When you say you want to think about what you have for your catchphrase, that's not organic. It's the opposite of organic.
Well, ultimately, it starts off as organic.
Oh, my!
Right, but then you keep doing it. Like, it's organic initially.
But you don't look at it and say, oh, that'll be my catchphrase. It just happens. What do you say when you're excited?
For instance, I am very excited about doing this show, so I'm going to yell, boom sauce! I'm very excited. That shows I'm
boom
very
sauce.
Excited. There you go. That was a very...
But that was premeditated boom sauce.
Well, maybe...
I think I'm right, Eamon, yeah?
There's nothing.
I mean, it's premeditated.
You know what?
It's
not
organic.
Rob's been forcing the boom sauce.
Premeditated boom sauce is just as delicious as non-premeditated boom sauce. I can tell that from experience. Anyway, Tommy Kern.
Yeah, good to have me and you together.
Yes, Rob Bradford along with you. Going to be with you at 2 o'clock. Yeah, man. I'm running the marathon, so.
That's not what I asked you.
I know, but you can't do one and the other. You don't want to sprain an ankle when you're. Did you ask me if I'm playing hoop?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What is with everybody's so afraid of getting hurt all the time?
It's different
That's
muscles.
That's why people stop playing.
It's different muscles.
Sports is they're terrified of getting hurt. I'll play with kids when they're in the 20s. Yeah, you know, I got work. I can't hurt my knee or anything like the shoulder. Like, how do you people play? How do you get hurt all the time?
I don't think I fall into that classification. All I'm saying is that when you're running for a marathon, mm-hmm. you probably don't want to go out and play a whole lot of basketball and sprain your ankle. And
why would you sprain your ankle?
Well, because you're different muscles. It's also different muscles. 617-779-7937. So it's,
every time you step on a basketball court, you sprain an ankle?
No, but...
You could step in a pond.
You could hit a curb. You invest so much. It's like when you're training, for instance, for a football player, right? Correct?
Sure.
I think a lot of these guys have it written in their contracts. Their teams would probably not love it if Rob Gronkowski went out and played up as their offseason training did pick up basketball all the time. Yes?
I think they like
it. They wouldn't love it.
Well, I don't. I think that they would. I think that they would be able to say, you know, let's not get in high intensity, you know, leagues, but you could certainly play some.
Do you think so? Do you think that Tom Brady? We see him going out and with
when I'm asking you if you're still playing any hoop and you say, I'm training for the marathon. I can't go on a basketball court I'll sprain my ankle.
Tom, don't ruin my pro segue. This was going to be I was trending toward an epic segue
back
here.
Back to last. Boom sauce.
No, this was going to, it was perfectly, it was set up perfectly. Tom, what are you doing? Tom Brady, I don't think he's going out playing pickup basketball. He's not training for a marathon, but he was training for a football season. We see him in his backyard with his shoulder pads and the helmet running around, so forth and so on. I don't think that he is doing much of anything else other than going down water slides and jumping off cliffs and things like that. Right? Correct?
I mean, it seems like you just mentioned two things.
Yeah, but that's not, those aren't really, that's not playing pickup basketball. You think Tom Brady is playing pickup basketball in the offseason?
He's running on the beach with bands attached to him. I think that's probably just as dicey as he. Look, there's a level of, you're down a side road. I just want to get back to the idea that I asked you just to still
play basketball.
And instead of saying, nah, I don't really do it anymore, I don't want to get hurt, you said, no, I'm training for the marathon.
Oh, I do it. I coach basketball, so I have to play.
Wait a minute. You're playing. You said you're coaching.
I have to,
two different verbs.
But you know when you're coaching. You know as well as
anyone.
You throw
it up a couple times, but it was a simple question.
I know. Am
I out of my mind?
I did an excellent job of segueing to what I want to talk about, which is Tom Brady.
You did kind of stomp on the segue, Tom.
All right. That's two against one.
All right. We'll get back to it. Tom Brady, does he play pickup basketball?
This is the segue?
No, yes. Just bear with me, Tom.
I think he'll shoot
No one said it was going to be a good segue, Tom.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So how does Tom Brady, if Tom Brady wants to prepare and keep going, does he have to be more, is he more careful in the offseason? Did he treat this offseason any different than other offseasons?
The 2018 offseason.
Yeah, leading into this year.
We all know that he did.
Yeah.
Over the course of his career, he's made it very clear that he wants to spend the offseason ramping up with his receivers. And then this particular offseason,
they did not go to Montana.
That he was not involved in passing camp, he was not involved in the voluntary stages of minicamp. So I think that absolutely it's pretty well established he was different this past year.
Do you think that impacted him in terms of where we are right now,
physically or on the field?
Both performance. I mean, basically, physically and on the field, either. And
physically, no, I don't think it impacted him. On the field, 1,000%. We can't sit here for 17 seasons and say, you know, the team makes its chemistry and builds its identity in the off season the way that it so often has and buy into the, otherwise it's propaganda if we buy into it that it's important and then in the year that they don't do it, it's not. I mean, this team said goodbye to Brandon Cooks, said goodbye to Deion Lewis, said goodbye to Danny Amendola. So the guys that they brought in, Jordan Matthews, Kenny Britt, Cordarrelle Patterson, Edelman coming back from injury, you know, Gronkowski, obviously he was up to speed. But I think those guys would have benefited, Philip Dorsett in an offseason, would have benefited perhaps from a greater presence from Brady in the offseason. But I don't think that those guys and their talent level, I think that the offseason absence impacted it, but the talent level is the bigger issue for what we're seeing in 2018. We have a lot of fixation on Tom Brady's knee and when he comes out of the football game and how this looks and how that looks and when year he was born in. But the greatest issue is when you take Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola, and Deion Lewis off an offense and don't really replace them capably, you're going to see what we're seeing offensively.
Well, I would also say this, though. You talk, and I don't disagree with you, but the other part of this is the guys who they have. You've taken these other guys which doesn't help, but the guys that you have also have all underachieved. Name a guy who hasn't underachieved.
Well, I mean,
relative in terms of what we expected them to be. Maybe Edelman, maybe just because we give him a pass because of his knee.
I wouldn't give him a pass because he missed four games, and that hurts, and two of them they lost. So, just on the basis of how have they performed to this point in the season – nobody. I mean, I would say Cordarrelle Patterson has outperformed.
So why is that? Tell me
why. Sony Michel has outperformed.
Why is that? Why is why is we have this group of guys, and yeah, you can take these guys out, but clearly you go into the season, the Patriots go into the season thinking, right or wrong, we have enough. We have enough because we see the best in each of these guys. We see the best in Philip Dorsett and Chris Hogan and Rob Gronkowski, so forth and so on. So why is it that all of these guys have underachieved? And I know that they're different human beings. I know that they're different athletes. But across the board, they're all underachieving. Is it because of the guy who's giving the ball? I mean, is it because we're talking about
well, the great thing about football, and I'm not trying to sound condescending, and I'm realizing that it will, but as opposed to baseball, everything is so interdependent, as you
know. Well, that's what I'm asking.
So I know, that's why I'm answering.
Yes.
What now?
There you
it's
go.
All interdependent. So Philip Dorsett's not a starting caliber NFL wide receiver, nor is Chris Hogan. So when you prop them into those positions, it's harder for them to become available and get separation. Julian Edelman misses the first four games. Gronkowski plays well out of the chutes, then he gets hurt. And he's also pissed off about the fact that he's making $8 million a year plus $5 million in incentives that he knows he's never going to reach. So he'll spout the party line at the podium about not being pissed off, but he's pissed off about it. And then when the injuries come along and the fact that they tried to trade him in the offseason, all those things enter into it. You have a drastically and vastly changed offense. People look at Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola and say, well, Amendola, they should not have tried to sign Danny Amendola for the same money that Miami did. End of story. 2 years, $12 million with $8 million guaranteed up from $1.5 million. No, you're not going to do that. The Brandon Cooks conversation, I understand why we defer to the Patriots, and I did at the time, with following their philosophical trend of moving on from a guy and getting something in return. But Jordan Matthews, Kenny Britt, and Cordarrelle Patterson at wide receiver were not sufficient enough to replace Brandon Cooks. You pay Cooks the $8 million this year. If he flies the coop as a free agent after this year, fine. Okay? Too bad, but you didn't have a replacement for him, so it made sense to keep him. Instead, they traded him, got a one back. And at some point, Isaiah Wynn will be a good player, but he's not helping you right now. So all of these things, what I'm driving at is they're all interdependent. So Edelman at 32 is a slot. No Amendola. Cook's gone. Gronkowski injured and pissed off. They didn't spend the time in the offseason. It's not Brady's MCL. It's not his birth date. To a degree.
Oh, it's not his MCL. You don't think this has anything to do with his MCL?
Well, there's a difference between it's not his MCL and it doesn't have anything to do with it. If we're talking percentages, I would say it's less than 15% of the impact is being caused by an injury that he had. That MCLs are four-week injuries. He injured it against Tennessee. It's quote-unquote fixed, but it's always going to be a problem the same way anything sore after it's injured.
What do you make of the people who say, because I default back to the Miami game when they say Brady can't do it, Brady can't do it. And I go back to the first half of the Miami game where this is the guy who's slinging the ball all over the field. He's doing it with great velocity. They're winning by passing the ball. And that was it. And then they say the moment that he collapses to the ground, equipment malfunction, and then you go from, and I've heard it, you know, and I'm asking you because this is what I keep hearing from this moment on. Here are the stats before. Here are the stats after. Here's the quarterback rating after he collapses to the ground. Your thoughts?
We are spending so much time with Zapruder film crap when it comes to Brady. Yeah, he does avoid more contact. And I asked him directly about it a week or so ago, you know, in the locker room. But what also happened right after that knee and he went down? They went into halftime. Mm-hmm. What happens at halftime? Teams adjust to what you're doing. They were getting shredded because they were playing zone. That's why Rob Gronkowski had his best game of the season. They were playing zone. They altered the way they were doing things defensively to a degree, not completely, but to a degree, and they performed better. What I'm doing is saying I would attribute more to what Miami did defensively and the fact that they adjusted to what Brady was doing than him going to the turf because something caught and pinched in his knee relative to the brace.
But this isn't Tom Brady anymore.
So, I mean, if you know, I'll tell you something else. There was an incompletion Brady threw the other day to James White. And after that incompletion, he started hopping up and down like a pogo stick. You remember that?
Mm.
Do guys with bad knees voluntarily start hopping up and down?
Well, let me ask you this, because
you answer that before you do the let me ask you.
Sometimes you can have it. You can have an injured knee and jump up and down. Yes, I mean,
but do you voluntarily decide? It's also up to jump up and down?
You can also be worried about.
Let's think about it.
You can also be worried about
1,000%. But let's think. We're spending an inordinate amount of time. I'm looking at this. You know, Ben Volen's story from yesterday. Is Tom Brady injured? Sure looks that way, and you know. You're saying the problem isn't knees and MCLs and how far away he is from the injury. The problem is the complement of players on the field and the level that they're playing at. As I said, you asked me, I said, it's about 15%, maybe the MCL irritating him. And I'm giving you information that would refute, A, they went into halftime after that. He played.
If you're going to give me 2 seconds, I would say also that's fair. After the second half and say they made adjustments, well, how come it carried over to Pittsburgh? How come
it
carried over to Buffalo?
But
Tom, you can't just say that. I'm with you in terms of I don't think it's that cut and dry that he collapsed to the ground and he was bad after that. But he has been continuously been a player like we have not seen.
How hurt was he against Detroit when they sucked on offense?
I don't know.
That's 7 weeks before the MCL. Correct.
But all I'm saying is that when you talk about hopping up and down on your knee, and that's proof that the knee isn't really the issue here, all I know, Tom, is that when you look at that guy, the guy that we saw against Buffalo, that was not the same guy that I had ever seen or seen in a long, long time, including, and I think that maybe it's not throwing the ball is affecting the knee. I think you're right in that respect. I think, though, he might be worried about it. And part of the proof, you tell me, in that game, tell me one time.
So you're supposed to.
Let me finish.
You've been going for 90 seconds.
Tom, you just went on this diatribe for 15 minutes. Let me talk for a second.
Holy crap.
When you have that game in Buffalo against Buffalo.
I'm just trying to establish it's the knee that's the issue.
No, I didn't say that.
But you're really hammering this point.
No, I don't get sensitive about the knee. Why are you so sensitive about the knee?
You're the one who's very.
I'm not sensitive. I'm trying to refute
a little bit of the Zapruder film. It's got to be the knee. It's got to be the knee. It's got to be the knee. You can't see the forest for the trees. It's a crappy offense.
Do you think he's worried about his knee?
No doubt.
Okay, so let me get my point out.
Spit it out, boy.
Oh, it's pot kettle black. Holy mackerel. I mean, you go to the Buffalo game, tell me one time where he ran through the progressions and did the pass more than 10 yards down the field, down the seam, in the middle of the field. One time where he attempted one of those passes to a receiver.
I mean, are we going to call it up on a laptop here?
No, I watched the game. You watched the game. It's your job. And I'm just saying that stuck out for me where I said that was out of the ordinary for Tom Brady. Usually, at least a couple times, especially when you have the luxury of having play action passes because they're running so well, they would try to pass, go through, wait a little bit, try to get the ball downfield. Did they try to do it one time?
No, why was that?
Well, they were running the ball.
Was he afraid of his knee?
I don't know. He didn't go through the progressions. He didn't hold on to the ball nearly as long as...
So was he afraid of his knee?
Right. So
I'm asking you.
I'm thinking that probably there was an element of that.
I don't think that's the case. Or maybe,
like I said to you before we came on, I do think this was a little bit of the Steven Jackson game where they said, hey, you know what? We're not going to take any chances because we know maybe you're a little banged up. And we want you to dump it down. We don't want you to, or maybe that was his decision. I'm not going to go through the progressions. I'm not going to hang on to the ball to throw it downfield. Am I wrong?
I don't know what you're saying, but.
I'll ask you the question. Did he do that? Did he do that at all? Did he go through his progressions and did he try to throw the ball downfield?
Well, he was 13 for 24. I'm sure that there were occasions when he did go through multiple progressions and move from one player to another, did the pre-snap stuff. Absolutely. Sure. You know, I think that. You know, I can think of a specific time. There was a crap throw over to Gronkowski in the second half. It was at the sticks. He had two guys coming from his left. James White picked up one of them. The other guy was coming free. Brady threw to the outside because he had a blitzer in his face. It was an awful-looking throw. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that throw, yeah, I mean, that Buffalo is a good defense.
Yes.
Buffalo has talent, is, you know, the number one pass defense in the NFL. The fact that they went into the game and said, we can probably, and we need to get our running game going. And they had some effectiveness on the ground. I think that they said, oh, we're going to ride with that here.
Yep.
But I think that we're probably fairly close to being in accord on what the issue is. No, he doesn't want to get hit. No, he's not protecting his knee necessarily. It's not limiting him. But I think that there is an element of, I'm not going to stand in here and try and wait for Chris Hogan to get open or Cordero Patterson to show up in an area where he's supposed to. I'm going to hammer it to Julian because he is where he's supposed to be, or I'm going to hand it off. That's what's going on. It's the players more than it is his knee.
Okay, but it was an aberration because you're right. They're having great success running the ball. But name me, and I don't expect you to name it, but it just seemed out of the realm of what we're usually seeing. When you're running the ball that well, that prototypical play action, boom, hit the guy down the seam, right? Even
look,
once
there
or twice.
No denying that they looked like ass, and I wrote it and said it during the game. The passing game looked like ass. But I think this continuous...
He said bot.
the effort to say that it's the MCL is missing the big picture of what 2018 has been about. It's completely missing the picture of what this season's been about, what this season's going to be about. They are not an effective passing attack. Brady probably gets them further along than they would be if he weren't here, but they're not an effective throwing team.
All right, there's a lot to pick through. 617-779-7937. Before we go to break, we have to answer the most important question, which is, should I be playing basketball? David in Wellesley. What's going on, David?
Hey, Tommy.
What's up, buddy?
I'm an old man. Good athlete, played a lot of sports. One of the main things that we don't play basketball at this stage of our lives is because you have assassins that are out there that have no concern about their body. Mm-hmm. That's why we don't do it.
How old are you, Dave?
I'm going to be 60 in March.
Yeah, you got to get out there and play.
The assassins are out there.
Well, same thing on pickup hockey. I mean, you go out there at 11 o'clock at night, some of these guys are drunk like Cooter Brown, and they're just looking to whack somebody, take somebody's ankles out.
You don't play with Cooter Brown anymore.
I'm with you. All right.
Thanks, David. There we go. We've come away for two. There's assassins when you go out and play pickup basketball and Cooter... And do not play with Cooter Brown, and no matter what sport.
Cooter Brown will get you.
617-779-7937. Like I said, a lot to pick through. I think that, as you said, Tom, we're close to common ground, and maybe by the end of the show we will get there. But there's a lot to get to. Also, when we come back, Rob Ninkovich was on with us on Monday morning, and he had an interesting take on Tom Brady as well. All of that. Right when we
back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
All right, we're back. Dale and Keith. I'm Rob Bradford along with Tom E. Kern, NBC Sports Boston. And also, we've been talking a lot in the first, a spirited debate about Tom Brady. And
people have no idea how awkward the break was when Rob
was
crazy. Look at me because he was pissed. I haven't been in there in a while, and I haven't seen Rob in a while. And
We argue right off the gate.
You were just silent. Silent Rob.
Silent Rob. But, you know, it's a long show. We let everything breathe.
Let it marinate.
But we did have, it was good. Like we were saying, honestly, during the break, we were saying, hey, listen, you know, we like getting debates into arguments, and as long as there's something to it,
as long as it's organic, as long as it's genuine, and that's what I'm trying to get is, you're saying that you're looking at the evidence of him bailing out, which I asked him about against Pittsburgh, when in the final throw of the game, you're falling to your left. Why? I've seen that happen a few times. You're seeing the game against Miami where they hand the ball off a crap ton and he's seemingly ignoring open receivers and he comes out with 6:40 left in the game and you're saying something's got to be wrong with the guy. And I'm saying, yeah, maybe the knee hurts, but there's something bigger wrong with the offense that they have actually gotten their brain around.
Which I don't disagree with, because I think the reason we're going down the knee road along with everything else is because you look at that game against Buffalo, and like I said, it was just like an image that we hadn't seen before. And then you're coming off of the last play in Pittsburgh, and then the MCL talk, but this is what Rob Ninkovich was on with us on this show, Dale and Keefe show on Monday. When asked about Brady, this is what he said. Just did not seem like a guy that I had seen a long, long time, if ever.
I mean, I see a guy that just doesn't want to get hit. And when you are in a game where that's the name of the game, you're getting hit all the time. You know, I just think that it's that point of his career where he's like, all right, I need to get myself ready for the playoffs. I can't take unnecessary hits. In a game where they pretty much had that game in hand, they were going to be able to continue and win that football game. So I think he was trying to limit his times he was hitting the ground. So anytime you're 41 years old, the more times you get hit and the more times you hit the ground, the longer you're going to feel it. So if he can get out of a game with the least amount of hits and the least amount of contact, you know, that's going to help him in the playoffs.
So do you think, Tom, that when I heard that, when Ninko, they call him Ninko? Do you call him, do people call him Ninko?
I call him the Ninkaroo. But
Ninkaroo. when the Ninkaroo says that, I immediately start thinking about, I think, what I told you. Like, I feel like maybe a semblance of this game was saving the bullets. Was this is the game plan. I'm going to avoid contact because, much like they handed the ball out 50 times to Steven Jackson for no reason to protect him because that offensive line was the worst offensive line in the history of Patriots offensive lines. Maybe that's reaching.
But here, I see where you're going.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with you because that game wasn't about preserving Brady in 2015 with Steven Jackson. And this game wasn't about preserving Brady in a game plan. The game plan wasn't keep Tom out of the way. The game plan was, look, we can't throw the ball effectively. Whatever we do, we're going to try and figure out a way to run it. That's what they were doing in Miami in 2015, saying we're going to run the ball until we pick up a first down on the ground. I don't care how we have to do it, we're going to do that. Against Dan Campbell's, had already mailed it in, Miami Dolphins. And the next thing you knew, the Dolphins were like, oh, they're kind of actually kind of disrespecting us here. Maybe we should play them and see how it works out. They beat them that day.
What was the – so to come back to our original discussion, the explanation for why Brady played like he did is on the Buffalo game.
Yeah.
And you're prioritizing the weapons, and I think the Josh Gordon thing, the narrative off of when Josh Gordon left, immediately everyone, oh, well, Philip Dorsett's there. Well, no, that's, yeah,
right.
It's not, that wasn't a reality. So I tend to agree with that's a thing. That's a huge part of the equation. But when you look at that Buffalo game, is there any hope at all? I mean, why?
Yes.
So
well, look at it this way, too. Look back, Tennessee, they come out of the Tennessee, they lose to Tennessee going into their bye. In that game, they threw, I believe it was 12 times to Gordon, 12 times to Edelman, 9 times to Gronkowski, barely any targets anywhere else. They got their asses handed to them. They couldn't do anything on the ground that day. They came out of the bye, they played at New York, and they ran for 220-whatever and handed the ball off over and over and over again. They wanted to run the ball against Pittsburgh. But they every time they made progress, they'd have a moron penalty and move them out of it. What we're seeing from the Patriots offensively has more to do with trying to find a way to win football games because their ground game has to carry them than anything else. James Devlin is a fairly capable fullback. Their strength is their offensive line, especially on the interior. And Sony Michel's a good running back. You got diversity back there with those three backs. Rex Burkhead, unfortunately, yeah, he does two things. He could do two things, but neither of them does he do as effectively as Michelle or White. So to me, Brady is almost a side issue. Yeah, you're going to have to throw to win. And if you fall behind or get behind the sticks, you're going to have to throw to win. But if that's the case, they're probably not going to win.
How much of a drop-off has Tom Brady had for whatever reason, because of the weapons, because of the physical, because he's not playing pickup basketball or maybe
sure.
playing too much pickup basketball, but how much of a drop-off? He was very good last year, but like you said.
MVP, best player in the league.
Right, but different offseason?
I'd say 20% drop-off.
Okay.
You know, him particularly. I think that he looks worse, as every quarterback will, when he's less certain about somebody getting open. And the other thing that amplifies it, and he talked about it with Mutton Callahan earlier this year, and he's very careful with the ball. He's anal about it. If a guy isn't in a certain spot, he doesn't trust him to be there, he's not going to go to him. If this might be looking a certain way, he's not going to do it. And there were occasions this year where he tried to take some chances, like against Kansas City, started wandering around in the pocket trying to make a play. He got strip sacked. They turned it into a touchdown. All of those plays make him have, predilection to not doing certain things that are going to put him
at risk.
Well,
you said trust a guy, and that's an interesting part of this, because we talk about devaluing the Josh Gordon influence. He trusted Josh Gordon. Like, he trusted Josh Gordon maybe more than even he was trusting Edelman, even more he was trusting Gronk. And then you took out the guy who Tom Brady is trusting more than anyone, and everyone was like, he'll trust Philip Dorsett.
But here's the thing. He trusted him to win 50-50 balls. But if you also look at the Minnesota game and then through this past game prior to his suspension.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
The trust diminished because, you know, they had a set of plays that he could run effectively and they were doing well with. But as Josh Gordon became a little bit more at loose ends, started to wall himself off a little bit in the last...
When did that happen?
Probably over the last 10 days.
Really?
After the bye.
Was that noticed? Because that's honestly the first I heard
I wrote about it.
Yeah, I mean, so...
I had no prior indication. I spoke Wednesday, did some reporting prior to it even being announced, and it was the first occasion that I heard where someone said... Yeah, he's really not himself. He's not talking to anybody. He's kind of walling himself off.
Well, you probably heard about the did he appeal the suspension? Was there
an
appeal?
Sure
the reason I asked that is because he might have heard about that.
But the teammates didn't know, and I didn't hear anything about it. But that's the interesting thing, folks. Well, they didn't throw it to him against Pittsburgh because I know he's going to get suspended.
That seems
like the opposite of what you would do. He's going to get suspended. We might as well bang it to him now. And get something out of him.
Yeah.
But, you know, his demeanor that week prior, I think, is what led to two targets and one catch.
That thing about, he wasn't on the field for the last play because they knew he was going to be suspended. Oh, my goodness.
That's what I'm talking about with the Zapruder film, like, investigate. We commissioned, you know, a whole committee to review certain things when it's usually what's most apparent is actually accurate. He wasn't on the field because he was friggin' gassed. And at that point, his conditioning isn't great.
We got to go to the calls in a second. But
okay.
You did say, you know, we're micro-analyzing every little thing. The last thing before we go to the calls, that last play in Pittsburgh, which we have gone over and over, and I'm sure you've been asked about a ton even on here, this radio station. What was your take? Like, why did Tom Brady do that?
Excellent. And I'm glad you asked me that because I was able to ask him directly. And it was a conversation more casual, not as much on the record stuff, but to characterize what you were falling away. First of all, he's like, look, I didn't look to James White on 3rd and 15 because I did not want to throw inbounds with 26 seconds left. I didn't want to have the game end with the ball in my hands. Had he been on the right on that third down play, remember which one I'm talking
about?
Yes,
absolutely.
Had he been on the right, I might have checked it down. But I had to go to the end zone in that instance. I think that probably refers back to the previous week with Miami, too. Took a sack, ran out of time. That was probably present in his mind. So he's like, I'm throwing it.
I would make the argument he could have still thrown it to White and spiked the ball.
But there was a lot of crap going on over there. So
okay.
I could see why. He said, my protection slid that way. Once the protection slides that way, you understand it's probably going to wall off that area. So, but to get to 4th and 15, he said, look, the last thing I wanted to do at that juncture, 4th and 15, was take a sack and have the game end with the ball in my hands. That's it. T.J. Watt was on his right. Did he have more time? Absolutely. Did he have more room? Absolutely. But again, he's cognizant right now, not just of a knee, not just of being 41, but cognizant of, I got to get out of the way because I'm not sure if this protection's going to hold up.
Well, that's the last play of the game.
1,000%.
This is Cam Newton not going for the fumble.
And that's why I asked Belichick about it on the conference call. I said, you know, he's falling away. Did that impact his accuracy? He said, you have to ask Tom. I don't think it's Cam Newton not going for the fumble. I think that's
That's an extreme, but it's the game is on the line. That's my point. The game is on the line, and you have to sacrifice your body, which you might not on a play that you might not sacrifice your body for earlier in the game.
Right, but to his. In his defense, and here's the thing. I will always defend the guy because of what he's performed and the level he's performed at. So if he tells me something, there's more or less a tendency on, there's definitely a tendency on my part to say, well, all right, that's what he says. And take it, because if he sees T.J. Watt after 5 Super Bowls and 8 Super Bowl appearances, and he thinks that T.J. Watt was an imminent risk to him, and he thought that he might be sacked, so that's the reason he started to fall away, I'm not going to say, well, he was bailing out on the play. He was thinking of the sack. I'm going to take it for what it's worth. I think at this point, now I want you to tell me what you think of that approach from a journalistic standpoint on my part. Am I being too
No, I think that a lot of times, especially when you're around someone, you're not taking it on surface level. You listen to them, and then you form an opinion. We do it all the time in baseball, where, here, why did you make that move? Well, as long as you give an explanation, a plausible explanation for it, I am more willing, probably more willing than people on the radio or on TV, to say, hey, you know what, this makes a little bit of sense. I will say, in that situation, I come back to, game is on the line. I know that you're feeling him. And I do think that it was ingrained him. What you said, it was ingrained him. We got to go to a break. I see the call.
But I do want to ask you this when we come back.
Okay.
Does he get to play by different rules than Jackie Bradley Jr.?
Okay. I look forward to answering that question. And I look forward to taking these phone calls. 617-779-7937. Be back after this.
Now back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
Brady having an injured knee, but he comes out yesterday and says he's 100% healthy, and that vibes with what your training staff says too.
Yeah. Well, again, at any point in the year, you know, everybody goes through something. It's a long year. It's a National Football League, but we've had pretty much full practice participation on many of our practice days here in the last few weeks, and so that's a good thing. It's good to have everybody out there working and. Make some of the game day inactives decisions harder, but that's a good thing too.
All right, that's Bill Belichick with I think Steve DiAsi, Ben Volen. We're on OMF on Monday. Yes, it was Steve DiAsi. By the way, I was on with DiAsi when the day after the Gordon stuff broke. It was great. Like, we had him. We had Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin was outstanding talking about it.
It's one of my favorites.
And then Chris Curtis to cap things off at night. It was great. And I'm sure that we can get to that later a little bit. But the most important thing is, I think we both agree with Josh Gordon. His absence, as happens a lot with, I think, particularly with Patriots fans, it's like, we'll just move on. Mm-hmm. And so it's, Bill Dorsett. Like, he's great. He's great.
Yeah, it's, Philip Dorsett's a complimentary wide receiver, third or fourth wide receiver who will help you. It's same thing with Hogan. When things break down, we're talking about, however, Philip Dorsett, who basically is my size and obviously
does not play basketball.
I bet he could if he wanted to, because he's an absurd athlete. But you get Josh Gordon, who's 6'3", 225.
Completely different player, right? Kind of player?
Contact, yeah. And even Josh Gordon was plucked from the bargain bin after Brandon Cooks. So the drop off from Brandon Cooks to Philip Dorsett in what they do and what they can do is significant. Now, Brandon Cooks is not as good as Josh Gordon if they were both at whatever their highest peak was. But Josh Gordon isn't as good as Brandon Cooks was last year. It's a 1,000-yard receiver at another 200 yards in PIs and could drag coverage down the field.
So I want to pay off in the tease here. You wanted to ask me a question about...
Oh, yeah. So I defer...
Jackie Bradley.
So there's a question, when Brady offers me an answer like the one that I presented to you, as, look, I saw T.J. Watt, there was some business there, and I faded away. I wasn't afraid to get hit. And I accept that at face value, because I think that over the course of time, we've not only seen the production from Brady, but also unrivaled toughness in terms of what he will withstand, 2015 AFC Championship being the prime example. So I'll take that, and I'll just offer it up, and I'm not going to say I don't believe him. Am I wrong to be less inclined to scrutinize his answers based upon his resume? Like you said, if you're going to ask Jackie Bradley something and he gives you the same answer, I think he probably deserves higher scrutiny. Craig Kimbrell, for instance.
We'll use Kimbrell as an example. So Kimbrell saved games all the live long day, and he's been, as his agent said, one of the best closers of all time. But then I see him in New York in that last game, and sweat's pouring off his arm, and he's bad. And after the game, he's like, well, it was hot. I think that what I would hope I would do is say, yeah, I can appreciate everything you've done to this point, but at the same time, I have never, ever seen that guy do this. Where be on the mound, where he is sweating profusely with no command, with no results, I can look at that moment and say, you know what, this is a lot different than these other moments. And I think with Brady, particularly when you hear Ninkovich, and, you know, I take a lot of stock when he says that, and I believe him. Like, that is what I believe. I believe that Tom Brady is conserving bullets. So when he falls away right. like that.
So that's, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, that I am, and that's why I presented it to him, and that's why I asked Belichick on the conference call, and I'm the only one who has asked either individual about it, because it is not alarming, but I guess depending upon your viewpoint, it's alarming or it's actually, you know, concerning or worth investigating, because it's not something we've seen in the past. And why is it? Is it because you're hurt? Is it because you're afraid, for lack of a better word, to get hurt, conserving yourself? What is it? Because we've seen him stand in longer and be less inclined to curl away from contact towards his left. So that's why, you know, the question is worth asking. But it's a weird place to be with Brady, whether it be as a fan, a media member, or somebody who's on the beat. And those are three different levels, because you do want to give a nod.
We say, what was he thinking? What was he thinking? And let's say 80% of the time after, there's like three layers of the thinking. There's three layers of that what we did not see in the initial thing. And that's I'm glad you asked Tom Brady, because that's the guy who can give you those layers. Now, his explanation for it, it doesn't line up. It lines up more of what Ninko said. I love saying Ninko.
Ninkaru.
It lines up more of, hey, you know what? He's in this mode where he's just trying to avoid. And hey, we're human beings. He's probably in that mindset, even on the last play, not factoring in that this is the last play. It's not going through Tom Brady's head saying, this is the last play. I have to stand in to the very last minute because this is going to make me the warrior to be the hero in the very right. last play. Probably not going through his head.
And I think also, if it was a more winnable play, instead of... All right, I'm at the 30-yard line. I'm throwing it 90 yards with seven defensive backs and four. It's 90 feet, not 90 yards. I'm throwing it from the 30, which is where he was. I'm going to throw it 90 feet on a line into an area where I have seven defensive backs, a short slot receiver in Jules, Gronk over there, who's, you know, God knows what he's doing up to. Cordarrelle Patterson, I don't know where he's going to end up at the end of this, but he'll be down there. And Chris Hogan. Well, I'm not going to stand in here and wait for something to come open in the end zone when it's nothing's going to be open anyway.
But I think that you hit the nail on the head when you brought up the James White example, when he gave his explanation why he didn't dump it down in James White. So he gave the detailed explanation of why he didn't do that. If it was on the right side instead of the left side, so forth and so on. Whereas I think that we both agreed that maybe it's the reality of the situation was he was thinking about the game before. He did not want to end the game with a clock running out.
All that stuff enters in.
Yeah, sure. 1,000%. So it's
what's the story of your year?
Exactly.
What's your year look like?
And this comes back to our original knee debate, which I agree with you. I don't think that we can say, oh, Tom Brady had a terrible game because he has a bad knee. No, it's all the things. We are picking through a lot of things, and we're going to get to the final answer by the end of it, and the callers are going to help us right now. Phil in Hopkinton, thanks for hanging on, Phil. What's going on?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Phil.
Listen, I think you got it all wrong, okay, on this whole thing about Tom. If you look at his statistics over the last 19 years, I've run the numbers. The average is, it's 3,900 yards per year. He's now at 4,105. The only outlier are two games. One is the Detroit Lions game, which we all know was horrible. And the next game was the Bills. They won. So they won because of the running game. So I think it's Bill Belichick, it's Josh, they're calling the right call. They don't need to go to the throwing plays to win these games. Sometimes you need to just run. You know what
right.
I mean?
And I do agree with you, to jump in, Phil. The point isn't whether or not the running game is going to be the Patriots' way of having great progress in the playoffs, because it absolutely is, and it's been that way since Detroit. The point is Tom Brady playing at the level that we're accustomed to seeing him play at? If not, why not? What are the factors? And is the biggest factor directly related to Tom Brady, or is it directly related to the players around him? Because where we're going to jump off to, probably as the show goes on, is if he wants to come back, does he want to come back here and be on board for what's going to be a rebuild? And do they want him here?
All right, Steve in Tewksbury. What's going on, Steve?
Oh, hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
What's up, Steve?
Good. Hey, Mr. Curran, I had a question for you. Ben Volen writes about it, that Belichick did want to trade Brady in the offseason. Do you believe that was true?
This past offseason?
Yes.
No.
Really? You don't think he's ever done it then?
Well, there's a difference between...
Oh.
Did Ben Volen write they wanted to trade Gronkowski.
Well, he kind of wrote, he said, as we all know now, Belichick tried to trade Brady and Kraft vetoed it. It was in Sunday's paper.
Oh, yeah. I think that the passage that he wrote was, as we all know, that Kraft vetoed, that Kraft forced...
Garoppolo?
Garoppolo to be traded, which I, again, I don't think that the vetoing of Garoppolo not being traded happened. It was more of a, all right, we've hit critical, this is last year, but we'll revisit it for the hell of it. Just, they reached critical mass. We have to make a decision here with Jimmy. And I think that what ownership made clear was, well, doesn't sound like a great idea, does it, if we try and franchise him, and he's certainly not going to agree to this bridge contract, so looks like we're probably going to have to move on, huh?
Mm.
And that was it. There was no edict. And that's why when they said we're trading him for a two, Robert Kraft's like, we're doing what? Yeah. Jonathan, does this make sense?
That's exactly what I said. They're doing what? They did what? The two and the first and the player
and
happening?
Bill being Bill, I think that his cover was, well, you wanted us to move on.
Jeez.
How do you like that?
Before we go to the break, Joe in Framingham, what's going on, Joe?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
What's up, bud?
Hey, just a quick question, something I'd like to hear you guys give a quick point on. I think the question about whether we've seen a big breakdown in Brady's performance, I think it's better asked, you know, I think I've seen some key plays where players like Edelman or Gronk or even Josh Gordon on a deep ball once, where Brady's hitting them right in the hands and they're dropping the ball, and it puts us in a situation where, you know, he has to make a larger pass on a third down, and then we come up short and it looks like it's Brady's fault. I just want to get you guys' comment on that.
I definitely think that the entire offense has performed at a level that is unacceptable for what the Patriots have put out there. You know, whether it's Edelman's drops for a period of time, whether it's, you know, Gronk's glancing throw that turned into a pick last week. And I think all of those things have been present throughout the season. They just have not looked good. And then that goes again back to the offseason.
Right, and a couple things when you come back off the break, you know, you had said the word, the R word, the rebuild word, and does Tom Brady want to come back in the rebuild? And nobody ever, a Patriots world say, oh, rebuild, reload, what are you talking about? Reload. And the other thing is that the caller before brought up, oh, look at the stats, they line up, he's having one of the best years. And people said this with Edelman, I've heard this recently as well. Well, it's the eye test. I mean, like, and it's just like the numbers that came out yesterday about the pass rush. Did you see these numbers? I forget who tweeted it out, that one of these analytics sites, it wasn't Pro Football Focus, another one, but they said the percentage of times a team has pressured the quarterback, the Patriots were number 3 in the NFL. Now, does the eye test, and I think as Andy Hart said yesterday, well, I would go to all the quarterbacks he played against and say, does that feel that way? And so there is an eye test element to Brady's performance, like Edelman's performance, the pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, you see, that's the thing about football stats is all they can do is start you on the road to having a conversation about why. You know, the Patriots ran for 273 yards last week. Why? Well, because they have to. They have the best quarterback of all time. Well, why are they running for 273 yards? Because they have to. A, because they could. B, and that's what their identity is going to be. I mean, there's always, for me, football statistics are usually, you know, why do 300-yard passers, when 300 was an accomplishment, lose at a 50-50 rate? Because you're throwing late in games when you're behind and compiling stats.
All right, that's correct. 617-779-7937. See, you lined up. Also, we'll continue the conversation. We'll bring up the R word, rebuild. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe you did that, Tommy Curran. I'm Rob Bradford. Be back right after this.